Corridors and passages once had led molten lava to the mouth of a belching volcano. Now puny humans trod the way and thought that they were gods. It was the temple of secret wisdom, but led me in. The rest of the Lamestic retinue had melted away in the darkness, as the dissolving memories of a dream, aged, desiccated with years and gladly awaiting their recall to the heavenly fields. Three old men, perhaps the greatest metaphysicians in the whole of the world, ready to give me my final ordeal of initiation. Each carried in the right hand a butter lamp, and in the left a thick stick of smoldering incense. As they were served merely to accentuate that silence, I came a faint rustle. To my horror I felt tingles and shocks all over me. Glowed as if a fresh aura had been added. The abbots, I saw, were also glowing. The very, very dry air and the friction of our robes had generated a static electric charge. An abbot passed me a short gold rod and whispered, "Hold this in your left hand and draw it along the wall as you walk and the discomfort will cease." I did, and with the first release of stored electricity nearly jumped out of my boots. Unless, I saw gigantic figures, covered in gold, and some half buried in uncut gems, loomed out of the gloom, so huge that the light did not reach beyond the waist. Other forms were dimly seen, the images of devils, the representations of lust, and the forms of the trials which man had to undergo before the realization of self did a 15-foot wheel of life. In the flickering light it appeared to revolve and made the senses reel with it. Sure we would crash into the rock. The leading abbot vanished. What I had imagined to be a dark shadow was a well-concealed door, going down and down, a narrow, steep winding path where the faint glow of the abbot's butter lamps merely seemed to intensify the dark. We felt our way haltingly, stumbling, sometimes sliding. The air was heavy and oppressive, and it felt as if the whole weight of the earth above was pressing down on us, hitting the heart of the world. A final bend in the tortuous passage, and a cavern opened to our view, a cavern of rock glittering with gold, veins of it, lumps of it, a layer of gold, a layer of rock. So it went on. High, very high above us, gold glinted like stars in a dark night sky, as sharp specks of it caught and reflected back the faint light the lamps shed. The cavern was a shining black house, a house as if made of polished ebony. Symbols ran along its sides, and diagrams like those I had seen on the walls of the lake tunnel. The wide, high door in coffins, curiously engraved and marked. There was no lid. I peered inside, and at the sight of the contents caught my breath and felt suddenly faint. These, they were gods in our land in the days before the mountains came, when different stars were in the sky before us. Two male and one female, every line, every mark faithfully reproduced by the gold eagle at the top. The jaws were narrow, with a small, thin-lipped mouth. The nose was long and thin, while the eyes were straight and deeply recessed. No dead figures, these, they looked asleep. We moved quietly and spoke softly as if afraid they would awaken. I saw a coffin lid to one side, on it was engraved a map of the heavens, but how very strange the stars appeared made me quite familiar with the heavens at night, but this was very, very different. To become an initiate, to see the past and to know the future. Leave here alive unless they pass. Are you prepared, and willing? I replied that I was. They led me to a stone slab lying between two coffins. Here at their instruction I sat in the lotus attitude, with my legs folded, my spine erect, and the palms of my hands facing up. Four sticks of incense were lighted, one for each coffin and one for my slab. Took a butter lamp and filed out. With the heavy black door shut I was alone with the bodies of the age-old dead. It smoldered red and there was the odor of burning cloth, then even that faded and was gone. Chill breathing, which I had been taught throughout the years, were oppressive. Truly it was the silence of the grave. Quite suddenly my body became rigid, cataleptic. Dying in that ancient tomb more than 400 feet below the sunshine. A jerk within me, and the inaudible impression of a strange rustling and creaking as of old leather being unfolded. Dawned that I was floating above my flesh body. With awareness came movement. Like a puff of smoke I drifted as if on an unfelt wind. Above my head I saw a radiance, like a golden bowl. From my middle depended a cord of silver blue. It pulsed with life and glowed with vitality. Supine body, now resting like a corpse amid corpses. Teed how the materialists would explain the presence of these immense figures, being my thoughts. I seemed that I was no longer alone. Snatches of conversation reached me, fragments of unspoken thoughts. Scattered pictures began to flash across my mental vision. From far away someone seemed to be tolling a great, deep-toned bell, and nearer until at last it appeared to explode in my head, and I saw droplets of colored light and flashes of unknown hues. My astral body was tossed and driven like a leaf upon a winter gale. Aches of red-hot pain lashed across my consciousness. I felt alone, deserted, a waif in a tottering universe. Black fog descended upon me, and with it a calmness not of this world. There came the booming of the sea, and the hissing rattle of shingle under the drive of the waves. Nair, and the tang of the seaweed up at the palm trees. But, part of me said, I had never seen the sea, never even heard of palm trees. The sound of laughing voices, voices that grew louder as a happy group of sun-bronzed people came into sight. I looked down, and saw that I, too, was a giant. To my astral perceptions came the impressions, countless ages ago. Earth revolved nearer the sun, in the opposite direction. Vast civilizations arose, and men knew more than they do now. Thence came a wandering planet and struck the earth a glancing blow. Its orbit, and turning in the opposite direction. Waters, which, under different gravitational pulls, heaped upon the land, and there were floods. Universal floods. Earthquakes shook the world. Lands sank beneath the seas, and others arose. The warm and pleasant land which was Tibet ceased to be a seaside resort and shot some 12,000 feet above the sea. The mountains appeared, belching out fuming lava. In the highlands rifts were torn in the surface, and vegetation and fauna of a bygone age continued to flourish. To write in a book, and some of my astral initiation is far too sacred and private to put into print. Reading and becoming dark, astral and physical, left me. Later I became uncomfortably aware that I was cold, cold with lying on a stone slab in the freezing darkness of a vault. Minutes passed, and a faint glow approached. Butter lamps. The three old abbots. You have done well, my son. For 3 days you have lain here. Now you have seen. Died. And lived. Stiffly I climbed to my feet, swaying with weakness and hunger. Out from that never-to-be-forgotten chamber and up to the cold, cold air of the other passages. I ate and drank my fill, and that night, as I lay down to sleep, I knew that soon I would have to leave Tibet, and go to the strange foreign countries, as foretold. But now I can say that they were and a stranger than I would have imagined possible. Chapter 18 Tibet. Farewell. Gazed in our direction and recognized the Lama Minya Dondup. Instantly the dust at the horse's feet was ill with the violence of his stopping. Had a triple prostration, and backed away, mounted his horse, and galloped off. Stood, the events below the Potala had given me self-confidence. And read the message before passing it to my guide, and friend, the Lama Minya Dondup. Go to the inmost one at the Jewel Park in the morning, you have to go as well. One does not normally guess at the precious protector's remarks, Lobsang, but I feel that you will shortly be leaving for China, and I, well, as I told you, I shall soon be returning to the heavenly fields of this day and of the scant time remaining. In the morning I trod the familiar path to the Jewel Park, down the hill, across the road, and into the main gates. The Lama Minya Dondup walked with me. In both our minds was the thought that this was perhaps the last time we would make this journey together. Perhaps it was reflected, too, strongly in my face, for when I saw the Dalai Lama alone, he said, "The time of parting, of taking fresh paths, is always hard and fraught with misery." And I sat in meditation for hours, wondering if I would do right to stay or leave when our country was invaded. Either would cause pain to some, Lobsang, and it is not an easy path for anyone. Family, friends, country, all must be left behind. The head contains, as you have been told, hardship, torture, misunderstanding, disbelief, all that is unpleasant. Science of the overself, they leave untouched. That is your path, the path you chose before you came to this life. I have arranged for you to leave for China at the end of 5 days. I climbed up to a mountain that was exchanged between us until we were again within the walls of the temple. Parents? The Lama Minyadon Up had been more than a father and mother to me. Leaving this life before I returned to Tibet in a few short years, all I would see of him then would be his gold-covered figure in the Hall of Incarnations, like an old, discarded robe for which the wearer had no further use. Busy days. From the Potala, clothes was brought for me to try on. Tight tubes, and their clothes were too tight. By these tight tubes put on me, and around my neck they tied a thick ribbon and pulled it tight as if they were going to strangle me. And holes behind, in which, they said, the Westerners kept things, instead of in a robe as we did. But the worst was yet to come. They put thick and heavy gloves on my feet and pulled them tight with black strings with metal ends. Those who went on hands and knees around the Lhinka road sometimes used gloves similar to these on their hands, but they were wise enough to use good Tibetan felt boots on their feet. I felt that I would be crippled, and so would not be able to go to China. Black inverted bowl with an edge round it was put on my head, and I was told that I was dressed as a Western gentleman of leisure. Stuff like this. On the third day I went again to my former home, alone, on foot, as when I first set out. But this time as a lama, and as an abbot. Father and mother were at home to meet me. This time I was an honored guest. In the evening of that day I again went to father's study, and signed my name and rank in the family book. Then I set off again, on foot, for the lamasery which had been my home for so long. The remaining 2 days soon passed. On the evening of the last day I again saw the Dalai Lama and made my farewells and received his blessing. My heart was heavy as I took leave of him. The next time I would see him, as we both knew, would be when he was dead. In the morning, at first light, we set out instantly. Once more I was homeless, going to strange places, and having to learn all over again. As we reached the high mountain pass we turned to take a last long look at the holy city of Lhasa. The top of the Potala, a solitary kite was flying.